Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rebel Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
Hey, it's the Tornado, Jim and Mikhail.
And I'm sure we'll have Psychic Tom Paget popping in any second. I'm going to have to probably give him the bad news when he taps in, but Duke is supposed to be a scheduled guest on tonight's show, and he turned out to be really sick, so sick, in fact, that he's canceled his trip to Vegas to watch the fights Saturday. So we wish him a speedy recovery there. Hope he's doing all right and getting medicated and at least weathering the storm there.
Is that Duke Rufus?
Yes. We still have Joey DeWedgeco for Joey DeWaco. I'm not sure exactly how you pronounce it. You might know better, Tony. Is it Philly again?
I think it's and I'm not 100% sure either, and I've met him a lot before. I think it's DeWaco.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
I'm not sure. I'm a Dago, I can definitely pronounce my own name with my own people.
But we got him in about 10 minutes. They seem to be popping in, so we'll talk to him for sure. And fortunately, we had a little bit of delay getting started here. But we have a ton to talk about, so we might run over the allotted time. We had a bunch of big boxing matches. I did watch Friday Night Fights last week, and unfortunately, our boy Tony Luis didn't do too hot. He was doing all right, and then got in trouble, hit the canvas, and we got up and was trying to recover and got swarmed again. And his father doing the towel. Disappointing, but I'm sure he'll be back. I'm sure he'll make the best.
Funny about it is, we were watching the fight last week, me and my dad and I. And the first fight, he looked straight at him and he goes, "Lewis is going to lose it." And he goes, "And I wouldn't be surprised if he got knocked out." And I looked at him and I said, "Well, what makes you think that?" And he goes, "He's just too easy to hit." And he comes in, he goes, he doesn't seem to me like he's got a lot of power. He's not really setting down on his punches. And the counters he's getting hit with these wide shots. His hands are low, and he is going to lose his fight. And lo and behold, he got stopped. And then what's funny was the main event was coming up between Sergey's and Zurich. Who only had one loss on his record. That was Stas.
He looked a lot worse.
And he'd only had a stoppage loss to Sergio Martinez. He was on his next night. And next to me. He had a draw in his last fight. And Vera has been around the block. And I think Vera wins this fight. He fought high quality of guys. He's been competitive. I don't see any reason why Vera can't win this fight. And lo and behold, Vera dominated him from the start and scored a stoppage of his own. So we were 1-1 on the Friday night fights.
Oh, it was a good show, though. I liked how Vera buckled down and he weathered a lot of comeback attempts there by Zurich. Zurich actually had some good middle ground, but just totally overwhelmed to Zurich there. He didn't want to fight anymore at a certain point. He just said, "That's enough for me."
But, it was one of the best Friday Night Fight shows I've seen in a while.
I actually thought Luis looked really good. I know he didn't have that much power in his punches, but he was doing the shoeshine shots and everything. And, it just goes to show you the styles make fights. And
that was the thing. And you wouldn't have thought it going in. I believe he was 15-0 with 9 knockouts. But it was evident from the first round only that he's not a big puncher, but there's sometimes you get guys that maybe aren't stereotypical boxers, but they don't have a whole lot of talent. Curtin is driving me nuts. They don't have a lot of talent. I mean, one guy that always comes up to my mind is Greg Hagedorn. Greg Hagedorn is a guy, you know, they always said, like, they don't know what made him good, except the fact that he just was. You know, he wasn't a power puncher. He wasn't exceptionally fast. You know, he wasn't big, he wasn't physical. He just was a well-schooled boxer. And if Tony Lewis is ever going to make anything out of his career, I think that's the path he's going to have to go down. He's really going to have to work on his jab. He was squaring up something terribly, and it was really taking even more of the steam off his punches. And he was trying to throw a lot of them, but the fact was he wasn't throwing them the right way. He was dancing with a power on, but he was leaving them tight. You know, even though if you're short and you got to fight on the inside, but you don't have a lot of power, you're going to have to use angles. You're going to have to come in, make the guy miss, hit him, jab him, get to the side, hit him again, keep him moving, and not let your opponent set his feet. Then Lewis didn't do that, and he was getting hit with big counter shots the whole time. And lo and behold, he was a stoppage, lost the stoppage.
And in the Zurich fight, I noticed, Zurich was keeping his right hand low throughout almost the majority of the fight. And actually, his only good rounds were when he started protecting his face with that right hand. And I was begging Vera to hit him with some left hooks, and he just, I don't know why he didn't see that opening, but I mean, he still was able to score a lot with his straight right, but that I see a lot in fights, and for a guy at Zurich's level to not know to keep your hands up, it's pretty bad. I mean, once you're into that stage of your career, you should know that the defense is very important, and I think that's why you got into trouble early, and you know, when you forget to do that, that's a big problem. You know, especially when you're considering if you want a long career and you want to maintain your health, you don't want to get hit in the face squarely too many times. So you got to at least get a glove in front of a lot of these shots if you want to protect yourself and win fights. And I just don't understand why guys that far in their career fall into those traps where they don't do that. You know, you look at a guy like Mike Tyson. One of the reasons why he was so good that people don't realize is that he always had his gloves almost glued to his chin when he wasn't throwing. So, you know, even if he didn't, it was a glancing look. So, if anybody from Zurich's camp is listening, tell your boy to get his freaking hands up. At least his right. Anyway, he was all right with the left, but
Had his right down by his chest a lot.
You can't fight like that. I mean, some guys get away with it because they do a lot of head movement and stuff, and they do a lot of feints. You know, Floyd Mayweather uses a shoulder. But, you know, if you don't have that kind of stuff, you don't have that movement, and you don't have any dynamics to your game, and you're boxing traditionally, like guys from Europe, like Zurich, usually do, then you have to keep your hands up.
You look at it like this, and I said this, I'm sure I've said this multiple times on the air. You know, every generation has, like, a fighter that's just so exceptional that people want to emulate them. Ali, in the 60s, you know, he could do things that most ordinary fighters, not just human beings, most ordinary fighters couldn't do. Then you had guys, you go there, you get a Sherry Lehrer. You had, then Mike Tyson was so exceptional. With Ali, he had a real long arm, he had a great chin, he had tremendous vision and reflexes. So he could box with his hands down. You go to Sherry Lehrer, who had very good chin, especially in his prime. Once again, fast hands. Tyson was a little bit different. Tyson had the, the tremendous speed and power. Roy Jones, who was back in the pattern of Ali, he boxed with his hand down, was exceptionally fast, generated a lot of power with his speed. Now, currently, you have a guy like Floyd Mayweather. Floyd's the guy that uses that shoulder roll, and you know, sometimes will distance and his reflexes. And I remember watching a fight about 2 years ago, and the one fighter was winning. He was winning clearly. And he tried to do a couple Mayweather moves, and he got caught, and he eventually got stopped. And I remember saying, if you're not Floyd Mayweather, don't try to emulate him. You know, a good guy that I would always say to emulate, especially in his prime, would be Bernard Hopkins. Or in his prime, look at a guy with James Dunn. And the reason for that is those guys didn't rely as much on natural abilities as much as they relied on proper technique and just a lot of old school fundamentals. You know, I can't do what Roy Jones did, but I'd be more likely to be able to, keeping the hands, using angles, setting counter punches. And, you know, that's why a lot of these fighters, they fight with their hands low, or they try to do like the make a miss with the head movement and all that, or just pull away from the fighter. Well, unless you're like an Ali or a Mayweather or in his prime over Roy Jones, you're not going to be able to get away with that.
All right. Another fight this week. It wasn't really, on Showtime or HBO or even pay-per-view, but we had Kimbo Slice went down under. He didn't lose the fight, but it looked pretty sloppy. He fell on the canvas at one point, trying to tackle the guy, basically. Looked winded in the first round, but the guy who fought was Tilliard, Shane Tilliard, and came back and just he escaped what could have been tragic for his young career there as a boxer. Now he's 38.
I said this 2 years ago, and maybe even longer than that. If Kimbo wants to make money, he's got to get a big fight now. And I'm not talking about a fight with a Klitschko brother or somebody on that level. I'm talking about I would try to call Mike Tyson out of retirement. Because, if he fights you to Klitschko, he's going to get annihilated. And he'll likely get annihilated against Tyson, even Tyson hasn't stepped in a ring in almost 8 years. But somebody's going to expose this guy, and he's going to get knocked out, and he's going to get knocked out brutally. Ray Mercer tried to call him out. He did it on our show. Well, the problem with that is if I'm a marketing director and I'm those, promotional head, I want to make much money in this little chunk of change because a lot of boxing fans know Ray Mercer. Maybe not as many as of the current fans because, he hasn't, he's done some MMA, but he hasn't really fought for a world boxing title in over a decade. So some of the newer fans are not going to know who Ray Mercer is. They're not going to remember his fights with Holyfield or Larry Holmes or Tommy Morrison. You got to grab a guy that Joe Public, the casual fan, is going to say, "Whoa, I want to see this." And that's why I keep coming back to Mike Tyson, because I think if you throw enough money at Mike, like, okay, yeah, I'll do it. I'm desperate enough for the money. And that's why I think you're going to get, literally four different types of audiences. You're going to get the audience, like my dad, that remembers Mike Tyson in his prime. I remember Mike's last fight when he lost to fight. My dad said, "Yeah, but it's Mike Tyson." I'm like, "Dad, Mike Tyson looked like shit in his last few fights. This is not going to be an entertaining fight." My dad said, "Yeah, but it's Mike Tyson." And we ended up, getting rid of the tickets and watching the fight, and the fight sucked. And, I'm going to have a rather worth of the game.
All right, well, I got to cut you short there. We have Joey Dwecko on the line. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Joey. How you doing?
Joe, what's up, guys? How are you?
Hey, Joey, how you doing?
Did I get the pronunciation right? Is the J silent there?
It's Dwecko. Dwecko with a V.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Remember that from now on. We appreciate you connecting with us tonight. Why don't you tell us a little bit about this upcoming fight?
What's that?
Can you tell us a little bit about this upcoming fight you got with T.D. Spence?
It's going to be a good fight. Another undefeated guy that I'm fighting. in his backyard. I've seen him fight before. I know what he's about. I know what I have to do. So we're working on a game plan in the gym, and I'm just excited to be back so soon since my last fight. And I just think it's going to be a great fight, and I come out victorious.
All right. Yeah, we were just talking about Kimbo. You'd be interested in fighting that guy?
Oh, man, I would love to fight Kimbo. If that guy that he fought was actually in shape, he would knock him out.
Yeah, that's what I saw. And from the backyard to the till yard.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, I saw this on your Facebook page probably about a week or so ago, maybe not even that far. And I don't remember who it was, but they put a comment on there. You know, you're obviously taking a lot of fights and taking on some prospects. You're fighting a lot of these guys in their backyard. And one of the things you came out there and said was, "Hey, I'm a fighter. This is what I do. I'm going to take anything I can get." You want to talk about that at all?
Yeah, I mean the words that I say, you know what I mean? Some of these guys don't even think about fighting guys with over five fights, let alone fighting a guy undefeated. I mean, this is what I do. This is what I've been doing since I was 10 years old. I mean, I've been trained to do this anyway, so I might as well do what I had to do so I could be known myself, you know what I mean? And a lot of these guys are fighting. They're not fighting anybody, really. So I mean, that's why I'm stepping up and I'm showing that I'm not afraid to fight. Obviously I'm not afraid to lose. I lost one of my fights, but I mean, we did some planning in the gym, and it's not going to happen again anytime soon. So.
You're still training in Philadelphia, right?
Yeah, I'm still in Philly.
How'd you get into the fight game in the first place?
Well, my grandpop had tickets to the local Golden Gloves fight here in Philadelphia at the legendary Blue Horizon. And I was only 10 years old. I went with him, and during the intermission break that they had, I turned to him and said, "Man, I would really like to try this." So he took me down to the Harrogate Boxing Club, and that's where it started. I haven't looked back since.
Right. And do you have a favorite punch?
My favorite punch is probably my left hook to the body.
I was going to ask you a minute. I was having a little reception trouble. But what gym is it?
What's that? You're breaking up. Sorry.
What gym do you train out of in Philly?
I still train at the Harrogate Boxing Club. It's actually Danny Garcia's gym. He has the upstairs to it, so it's Swift Boxing Club. That's where I'm training at with my trainer, Billy Briscoe.
I met you down at the Cardiff Arena a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah. I'm a Philly guy. I grew up in the area. I trained down at Mary Anderson Rec Center.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I've been out of the game a couple of years now, but I still train guys up in the northern suburbs now, you know, just for fun. Obviously, I always keep track of, a lot of the local talent that we got.
Yeah, definitely. That's good.
Now, Joey, what would you say is your ultimate goal in the sport?
Basically, My ultimate goal is to make sure my family's set, and I live a comfortable life, and ultimately to be champion, whether it'll be in the cruiserweight division or the heavyweight division.
Okay.
All right. Is there anybody out there you really want to fight right now that get your sights set on?
You know what? A lot of people ask me this all the time. I just want to fight whoever, man. Whoever steps up to fight me, I would love to fight. It doesn't matter who it is. If they call me to fight Vladimir Klitschko on Saturday, that's who I'll be fighting. You know, so, I mean, whoever steps up and fights me, I'm not saying that I'm a world beater or anything, but whoever steps up and fights me, I'll be happy to fight, no matter what.
All right. And what do you love most about boxing?
Well, it's just the competition that's out there. I mean, I had a pretty good amateur career. I had a great amateur background, and basically, what I loved most about the amateurs was going up, like seeing different places and traveling and meeting new people. Basically, most of my friends that I have is all boxing related. I have a couple friends just from childhood, but most of my friends are boxing related. I met my fiance through boxing. We have children together now, and everything in my life is just surrounded by what happened from boxing. Like, if it wasn't for boxing, I wouldn't be out of the city of Philadelphia. If I didn't start fighting, so I mean, I just have a true love for this sport. And even when I'm out of boxing, like fighting wise, I'll still be in it and dedicated to training or having my own gym, maybe managing fighters, promoting fighters. That's one of my goals too in boxing.
Oh, cool. I can definitely relate, because if it wasn't for boxing and my little short amateur career, we probably wouldn't be talking to you right now. I wouldn't have Tony on the show either. Tony, I met through boxing, so there you go. And I got to travel a lot, too. I went to Virginia Military Institute for a semester for the exchange program with my school, which was a small military school in Vermont. And so I got to go to Annapolis.
Yeah,
and,
I've been
there. That was actually one of my best learning experiences there, because it was our first scrimmage of the season. And
okay.
Beat the heck out of me. Made me quit for the first time ever in a boxing match. And came back at the end of the year. And because second time, so. That's the world. And I did get to travel a lot, too. You know, I only had about five total fights. I think I went to Kentucky, all over the South down there.
Yeah.
But getting back to you, what would you say is the strength of the sport right now? What would you say about what boxing is like overall and where it's going right now?
Well, a lot of people say that MMA is taking over, but I feel that boxing's been around for hundreds of years, and I just think MMA is getting a little bit more popular, but there's always going to be boxing. So basically, I would like to see some of the judges that are in boxing not judge anymore, because, I mean, they started a lot of trouble in the boxing world, and that's basically what's losing fans right now and guys switching over to MMA. Like, I'm not knocking MMA. I know they're hard workers. They're tough guys. And boxing is the better sport, and, I mean, it's been around forever, so I just think that it's on a decline right now, but it'll be back eventually, you know.
One thing, when I first started a couple of years ago, as Rich was saying, we were both on the collegiate amateur circuit at the same time, and we were in the same weight class in the 98 Nationals, just in a different bracket. I ended up drawing the defender, the eventual three-time champion, in the first night. He was 6'7". at 5'8". You know, I was never a tall guy. I was 180. I'm fighting a guy 6'7". And then Rich drew a guy that ended up beating him by the name of Michael Jordan, who I fought earlier in the year. So I ended up bumping into him through Iceman John Scully, and we started talking. And when they first, before I became the co-host of the show, they had me on doing a debate between boxing and mixed martial arts. I took the boxing side because I'm a diehard boxing fan. I remember watching a lot of the legends, especially a lot of the Philly guys, Matthew Saad Muhammad and Jeff Chandler, Meldrick Taylor, a lot of those guys I watched growing up. And, of course, you know, Smoking Joe Frazier on videos because, you know, he was retired by the time I was born. And I got on there, and I'm debating a guy that was an MMA fighter. He was an amateur MMA fighter, and I'm debating him. And the one point I came out and said, the one thing I love about boxing, and one point I used as an example, was the first Dottie Ward fight in 2002. I said, in an MMA fight, a lot of times when a guy goes down and is stunned, the fight's most of the time over. Guy gets hit, he goes down, the other guy pounces on him, and it'll get stopped, and rightfully stopped. But what I love about boxing, and look at it, and actually all three Gotti Woods fights, Castillo Corrales, there's so many other great fights throughout history, a fighter will go down, and he might be hurt bad, and he has that 10 count to get up, and, you know, then he might have to survive. He might have to do anything he can to survive, holding, you know, just punching back, anything he can. And he does, and then he turns the tide. That's what I love about boxing, because you have that, you're on the edge of your seat, like, oh, shit, can he survive, or is he going to take him out? Is he going to finish the... And then if he does survive, can he turn it back around? That's what I love about this, you know, myself personally.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's different opinions on that, too, you know. Like, with MMA... Some guys don't want to see other guys taking another guy to the ground, you know, and rolling around on the ground.
Right.
And that's just boring. With boxing, there's always excitement no matter what. Like, one punch could end it. And, I mean, that's what I said. Again, I'm not knocking MMA, you know. It's making a lot of money right now. It's making a lot of noise in the sports industry, and a lot of people are liking it, but... Like I said, boxing's going to be around forever. It already has been around forever, so it'll still continue to be around.
Yeah, I'm just curious. Judging those last few weeks, we've had conversations with people involved in the most controversial decisions in boxing this year, and actually a little bit into last year. We had. Steve Cunningham on, who had a controversial decision there with Adamek, and last week we had the promoter of, or actually a couple weeks ago now, we had the promoter of Ramses Barthelemy, who I thought got a real gift against his opponent there on Friday Night Fights.
That fight was crazy, man.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that, but our third co-host here, Psychic Tom Padgett. So I just want to quickly introduce him. How's it going,
good evening,
Tom?
Gentlemen, and good evening, Joey.
How are you? Nice to meet you.
Oh, we're hanging. Hey, been looking forward to talking to you. So sorry I'm a little late tonight. The business.
No problem.
Had a couple other business things, but better late than never.
Yeah. I hear you.
So if you want your fortune told, now's the time.
Yeah, I see nothing but good things, Joey. Hey, Joey, a question I have for you. You know, you often hear the old cliche that boxing is three quarters mental in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And my take on that is that's true once your technique is really there and your conditioning, because I don't care what your mindset's like. As you know, if you're out of shape, if you don't have the technique, it doesn't matter how positive your thoughts are. But let me ask you, how do you psych yourself up sometimes? Because it can't be easy, not just the training, but the fighting and all of it. And do you have any special way you do that?
Well, I mean, I've been doing this for a long time now, and even through the amateurs, I just think about my family, and that's what motivates me, really. And now I have, an extra reason. I just had a baby almost 4 months ago, and that just makes me push harder and harder. So basically, that's what I think, and that's how I feel. But boxing is a big mental game, you know, because you could have all the tools in the world. You could have great conditioning, running 5 miles a day, training 6 hours at the gym. But if you don't have a good mindset, then pretty much all that is wasted, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations on fatherhood.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know, I've often heard sometimes fights are won and lost at the weigh-in. And then sometimes you can see how someone will be making the walk to the ring, and all of a sudden the whole moment hits them. You know, they're caught up in the moment, and it's like, wow. You know, and I think that's great motivation. You got to keep thinking. It's not just about you. It's not just about what happens tonight, but if you perform good 5-10 years down the road, it'll be well worth it. So, yeah.
Yeah, the other side of the mental thing, too, is, you know, you have to be focused on recognizing flaws in your opponent and strategy and all that stuff. It's not just about endurance and focus on, you know, getting through the fight. You have to be up on your, you know, which is very important. Now, what's the most important thing that you do to get ready for a fight, Joey?
What's that? I'm sorry, you were breaking up. The most important thing?
The most important thing you do to get ready for a fight?
Basically just staying in the gym, doing what my trainer tells me. If it's sparring that day, then we do sparring. If it's technical work, we do technical work. If it's conditioning, we do conditioning. So basically whatever my trainer tells me to do, that's what I do.
All right. Well, I'm sure he'll be happy to hear that if he's listening.
He better be. Joey, let me ask you something else, if I may. You know, at some point, I think all fighters who are starting to have some success really feel that they have a possible future in the sport. And was there any one particular moment that's like, yeah, I know I can go somewhere at this?
Well, like I said, I had a big amateur career, and one of my final amateur fights, I won the world championships down in Guadalajara, Mexico. And after that, I went away to a couple training camps, one with Haseem Rahman, and I was also away with Samuel Peters. And that pretty much gave me a lot of confidence, thinking that I can be a threat in the sport, you know. And pretty much after a couple of my professional fights, I felt that I knew that I can do it, you know. And my pro debut, I fought a 6-round fight, and you really don't hear that too often, you know. So after that, like, I knew that I could definitely do it.
Yeah, great.
Now, what would you say was your toughest fight so far in your career, amateur or pro?
My toughest fight, and I give this guy a lot of credit, even though he was a big talker at the weigh-ins, and he came out a complete different fighter. But my last fight that I had was in Connecticut at the Mohegan Sun, and I fought at Jarrell Miller. He was 4-0 with 4 knockouts. And pretty much he was an MMA fighter. He was a K-1 fighter. He had, like, a crazy record in K-1. He was, like, 27-0 with 21 knockouts. And everybody says, wow, man, this guy must hit hard. Like, he must be, like, intimidated or something. And I knew right from the start, the moment I got the call, and I did some research on him, and I knew that the experience that I had could outcome anything that anyone had to offer, you know. So, I mean, he started mouthing off to me at the weigh-ins, and I have way too much experience for that, you know. And I just knew it was for the cameras. And then once people weren't around, he tried being my friend and all. But when we got into the fight, I clearly won the first round. Then he started throwing elbows. He was hitting me with his forearm, like rubbing it across my face and everything, hitting me with headbutts, throwing me on the floor, like on the ground. And just from him being able to do that, it was a tough fight for me because he used his MMA background, you know. So, I mean, that definitely was a tough fight.
Well, they call that MMA dirty boxing.
Yeah, exactly. I never fought anybody that dirty before. He was definitely the dirtiest fighter I ever fought.
Well, Joey, where was the referee at during all this?
He was there. He was a good referee. I forget his name, but he kept warning on me. He eventually took points off of him, but it kind of threw me off my game what he was doing to me, you know. So, I mean, if anybody figures out a way to beat me, that almost might be one of them. These dirty tactics.
Well, I guess sometimes you have to give back what you're getting. Takes a little practice, but you know, also if you don't have a few rough spots, I mean, you're fighting the wrong people.
Yeah, exactly.
Tony and I ran into a guy like that in boxing in the amateur circuits from Penn State. What was that guy's name, Tony?
Jesse Bond,
yeah. I almost headbutted him when he threw an elbow at me because I was so pissed, but the ref wasn't doing much to help me.
Yeah.
One of my favorite memories, talking about dirty boxing, when I was first starting out in 94, you know, I lost my first amateur fight because I was a Haven, and I lost my first fight because I didn't get my ass in shape. And then I started really getting in shape, and I started training down in Philly. So I won my next fight, second round stoppage, but I remember coming back because the guy was maybe about 20 or so. That was 191, 192. He was about 214. And every time I'd hit him with a good left hook, he'd bear hug me and clinch me. And then he didn't come out for the third round, so I got the win, but I was frustrated. And I remember saying to my trainer down at Marion Anderson, I was like, the guy kept clinching me, and he was stronger than me, and I didn't know what to do. And my trainer looked at me and goes, just bounce. I was like, what do you mean, bounce? He goes, watch. Yeah. And he got me in a cleats, and he goes, look where my chin is. I'm like, it's right on my shoulder. He goes, right, when you bounce, you're going to stick your shoulder in your elbow and in his mouth every time. He's going to stop clinching you. And so I learned that little trick. Now, about a month into that, I'm fighting at Penn State against a kid. He was a senior, and he was striking me, short, stocky, very aggressive. And he started attacking me at the opening bell. And he definitely had the advantage first round. And he was kicking my ass, to be completely honest. And he slipped inside of it and put his head down and battering rammed me right in the face. I got warned because I turned to the referee and said, yo, he headbutted me. The referee said, don't talk. No talking in the ring. I was like, my nose is literally felt like it was on the other side of my face, and it's pouring blood. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, I'm not even. And then I turned to the guy, he goes, no headbutting. I'm like, you gonna pick a point or anything? It was kind of intentional. Well, they didn't. No, I ended up losing the decision in that fight. But what it did was it woke me up. It pissed me off. And this guy that was really thumping me for the first round and a half, I pumped in the end and gave myself confidence. You know what? I can stand up to these more experienced guys. And then I went right back to Philly, started really sparring with a lot of good guys down there, and that's what toughened me up. But then this other kid, Rich, was just mad. If he had two arms, he could clinch you with six. Our first fight, I beat him because he was clinching and I'm punching. So when the second fight, you know, we're in his home arena. The first round, I was kind of slow, you know, and he got some good shots off. I started hitting him in the body. The second round, he stopped. I'll never forget what my coach said going into the third round. You kill the body and the head goes with it. Well, the body's fucking dead and I'm knocked him out. Every time I hit him, he would clinch me, and then he would kind of just like drop to his knees, and he did it about three times. We only caught one of them a knockdown. One judge from Penn State gave him that round.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, no, Joey, I explained something to both my esteemed co-hosts when we were on the show last week, and I don't know if they were really grasping the concept of it. So I need another Philadelphian to weigh in and maybe explain to these guys what I'm doing tomorrow morning at 7 a.m.
What's that?
What are all Philadelphia? I'm trying to explain to them why I'm leaving my house around 2 in the morning to go to the First Union Center or whatever, the Wells Fargo Center at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning.
It's the Wing Bowl.
Wing Bowl, baby.
The Wing Bowl.
my buddy in particular, and his mother's like, "You're going to what? You guys eat the wings too?" And we're like, "No. People eat chicken wings at 7 in the morning, 20,000 people watch them?"
I heard Dave Gudelli's in this year.
Yeah, he's been in it the past couple years. Yeah, last year I was down was 2010. Yeah, I went down in 2010, and then obviously the last 2 years with my job I couldn't get off. Well, this year I'm able to go down again. So I was like, oh my God, I was looking at the competitors, I'm like, Dave Brunelli, I covered some of his fights.
Well, listen, after the Wing Bowl, the after party is usually at Finnegan's Wake, down on 3rd and Spring Garden.
Okay.
You know where that is?
Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah, so I'm working there tomorrow. So I've been working there since
shit.
I was like 18. Yeah. Yeah, so stop in if you want.
I got to run by my friends because I don't want to get in trouble tomorrow. My one friend, it's his birthday, and his girlfriend is throwing him a big birthday dinner tomorrow night.
Okay.
And she already told all four of us. She says, people are going to have a live band. And she told us in certain terms that we will be at the dinner and we will all be coherent. When we come back from work. Because you figure the dinner is until 7, so we should be home by around 2. So we have 5 hours to smash that out of our mind.
Yeah.
It's always a good time. You know, a lot of times people that are not from the city, they don't understand it. They're like, you watch 20,000 people watch people eat wings at 7 in the morning? I'm like, yeah.
Sounds like a Philly thing, but I get it. One of those things. But I think Tony first told me about that like years ago, and I told him to go try to recruit some ring girls down there. we have a ring girl contest on our website. We haven't done it in a while, but we hit some.
I remember that.
Contestants. So getting back to boxing, is there anybody out there that you try to follow? You watch a lot of fights and you try to pick stuff up from as far as boxers out there?
You know what? One of my favorite fighters is James Toney. Even though he's a little past his prime right now, or a lot past his prime right now, but I could sit there all day and just watch him. He's a defensive master, and he has a great offense too, you know, so... I love the way he moves and the way he can just roll punches and he's so relaxed. So I mean, I'm not saying that I jock his style or anything, but I use a lot of his moves.
Yeah, in his prime, he was nothing to mess with. And
I
think if I remember correctly, we had Jones Jr. on the show a while back, and we asked him what his toughest fight was, and he said James Toney.
I actually, about 10 minutes before we got you on the line tonight, I had mentioned James Toney. We were talking about, you know, fighters that make tactical mistakes in the ring. Mm-hmm. And I said every generation of fighters that a lot of young kids want to emulate, and especially a lot of even young fighters, even if they've had some fights under their belt, back in the 60s and 70s, you had Ali. And a lot of guys, be honest, you can't do what Ali did, you know. Even if you're a tall, quick boxer, he just had tremendous reflexes. Even, a few years after that, you had a guy like Sugar Ray Leonard. In the 80s, it was Mike Tyson. Now, the guy that's,
6'1" and 165 pounds with long, lean arms is not going to fight in a Bob and Weave Mike Tyson style.
Yeah.
And then after that, you had the Roy Jones era, where a lot of guys tried to do, like, the lead hooks and the, bolo punches and the fighting, like, the cockfighting with your hands behind your back. If you're not Roy Jones, don't do it. And now you have a lot of guys emulating Floyd Mayweather. And I was saying, whenever I train guys now, guys always try to, dance around and do all the fancy stuff. And you let them play for a little bit. But then when you get serious, the guys, I always make them emulate and watch in their primes. Not as much now because they're older. But I make them watch a young James Toney and a young Bernard Hopkins. Because those guys, everything is on technique. The defense, the angles, the counterpunching, setting up the punches, the jab, hooking off the jab, seeing the punch. And actually, it was funny. 10 minutes before we got you on the air, those are the exact fighters that I mentioned.
Yeah, James Toney was a master,
Yeah, it's probably one of the best punches to do is throwing that jab out there, and that's one of the techniques that I lived and died by. And in my short boxing career, I actually had a judge come up to me, my only win at nationals, and he met me in the hotel lobby, and he said, the jab is what won you that fight. So I never forgot that. I used it as a defensive weapon too, just to get the guy away from me.
You know what the best punch in boxing is?
What?
The jab.
Yeah.
The jab.
The first one you learn, right?
You know what the second best punch in boxing is?
The hook. I like the left hook myself.
No, it's the jab.
Yeah, there's two different kinds of jabs. A lot of people don't realize that. There's the power jab and the quick jab.
Yeah.
When I was first really learning down at Marian Anderson, and me being a short guy, I was 5'8". Most of my career, I was between 165 heavyweight, normally around the 175 to 180 range. I'm fighting everybody taller than me. And the one thing I said to me, you got to learn how to take a guy's jab leg, because guys are going to try to keep you off of them. And they had me for round after round after round, just catching the punches, using my right hand and just parrying. And then they said, now you got to see when that left shoulder twitches, you catch and you just stick your own right in his mouth. Because if you want to stop a tall guy from jabbing, the time he throws that jab, if his jab doesn't land and he gets punched in the mouth, he's going to stop real fast. And now he can't keep you off of him. And they had me down in the ring at Marian Anderson one night. I was 18 years old. And the guy in there was taller, and they had him have my headgear on my mouthpiece, and they had him throwing jabs at my forehead. And they said, if you want to land, it'll land on the padded part of your forehead so you don't get gun-shy. You're not getting your nose, your mouth, your eyes. And they're like, just keep catching them. They catch them and then slip them, slip to the inside, slip to the outside, slip underneath them. And then I remember my trainer saying, okay, you're doing really good. After a round or two, he goes, but you're catching too many. So now I want you completely slipping them all. So now I'm slipping these punches. Well, first, you think you're backing up too much, because in natural reflex, if you're not punching back and the guy's punching you, to back up. So you could get back until you can't back up. Then after a round or two, you're catching too many. Drop your hands at your sides and slip them. And that's how I learned. You see the jab coming, to counter it, to jab back at a guy. And that's what I teach about now. Like, if you're a fighter, even a short guy, you and I are both the same pretty much. We're the short, stocky, in-your-face type fighters. But, hey, no reason you can't have a good jab and no reason you can't hurt a guy with a jab just because you're short.
I was sparring on... Did you ever...
MMA, Horace Griffin got knocked out by a jab by Anderson Silva.
Yeah.
So.
That was in Philadelphia.
Yeah. was a good fight.
Yeah.
For sure it was.
Did you guys ever hear Marcellus Brown?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
He's a big 7-foot from Louisville, Kentucky. He I was out in camp with somebody one time, and he was one of their sparring partners, and he was training for a fight, and he was fighting a guy about my height. So he said, look, if you give me a few rounds, that'll be cool. I was like, yeah, no problem, that's cool. And I'm only 5'10". I'm sparring a guy 7 foot, 280 pounds, you know. And my jab was landing before his. I was stepping in and moving my head before he could even touch me with his jab, and I was moving out of there already. You know, so the jab definitely is the best punch in boxing.
Yeah, it's a timing thing, too. It's a gauge to show you if you're in range or not. I mean, there's just so many uses for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I remember that old cliche, when you don't know what else to do, jab.
There's the jab. Yep.
I had the great experience of boxing at the same gym that Marvin Hagler came up through in Brockton, Massachusetts. And the Petronelli gym, the Petronelli brothers started it. Goody was the one who finished up with it just before he died recently, a couple years ago. But I met Goody and talked to Goody and was up there a bunch of times. And my favorite sign there was a little sign on the wall that said, "When in doubt, jab out."
Yep.
So, I always followed that advice even before I saw that. Any predictions for this upcoming fight as far as how you think it's going to go?
What's that? I'm sorry.
Do you got any predictions for this upcoming fight and how it's going to go?
You know what? I never give a prediction because anything could happen. The last time I went out there, I was supposed to fight Oscar Rivas. We went to the weigh-ins and got cleared by the doctor. Everything was good. Then the next day, we walked over to the Bell Center where we were fighting, and then his promoter came up to us and said that he pulled out with a hand injury. So my trainer said, no, his hand's not hurting. I think it's his heart. You know, so I never make predictions, but I'm definitely coming out with a win. You know, my last couple fights I had a draw and a loss, so I'm definitely on the track to rebound in the win column. You know, so I'm gonna have to do everything I can to get a win, especially in his backyard. You know, he never fought any other professional fights anywhere else. They were all inside the Bell Center in Montreal. So I'm definitely gonna have to do as best as I can to come out with that win, and I know it's gonna happen.
And how many rounds is the fight?
It's a 6-round fight.
Well, all right. Well, that's enough time to knock him out.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you know, this hometown cooking is such a big problem.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the only way. All right. Well, is there anybody you want to give a shout-out to, say hello to, thank, or anything like that?
I mean, I just want to thank all my supporters and my family, especially my fiance Maria, her daughter Hallie, that's my stepdaughter, my daughter Jayla, all her family, Maria's family, all my family, my friends, and especially my trainer. He's done wonders with me already, and I'd like to thank my brother too. He's in the gym with me and all. So definitely keep an eye out for me. I'm definitely coming up, and I'll soon be known in all around the boxing world.
All right. Well, we look forward to tracking your career, and it's been great chatting with you tonight. And
all right,
I know
thank you.
Probably not going to need it, but best of luck in the fight for sure.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on the radio show. I had a lot of fun, guys.
You're welcome, Joe.
All right,
I'd like to see you tomorrow. I'm not sure, but if not, I'll send you some window pictures. All right, sounds good, man. Thank you. All right. All right, see you guys. See ya. All right, so there you have it. Joey DeVico. I hope I got that right that time. So,
We got a heck of a lot to cover for Ken Combat Sports here. We talked a little boxing before you got on, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't have anything to do with upcoming or past fight from this last week, but it has to do with performance-enhancing drugs. Of course, boxing and MMA have both had their own problems with this, but there was a recent report put out about a company called Biogenesis, which is a Miami anti-aging company that allegedly provided anabolic steroids and human growth hormone to a number of famous athletes. And among those included in the report was boxer Euriorkis Gamboa, who is a 2004 Olympic gold medalist from Cuba and is the current interim WBA super featherweight champion. And Gamboa couldn't be reached for comment on this story, and his promoter is actually 50 Cent, who we actually found out a few weeks ago is working with Leon Margulis, who we had on the show. But it's kind of, he's not talking about it at all, not answering questions, and he might get wrapped up in this. But he hasn't been linked in any previous situation with PED use. And obviously he deserves the presumption of innocence, but the report shows the flaws in the battle to keep PED usage out of boxing and mixed martial arts, where it can literally turn deadly. And of course we talked about this. Major League Baseball has taken such a stand against performance-enhancing drugs and so strong of a stance that actually there were no players inducted into the Hall of Fame this year, because the only ones that were up for it were known PED users. So actually not the only ones, but I think the newest class that were just turned eligible, among them was Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds. But anyway, no worries about action being taken against him. Gamboa has no worries, actually, according to this article, about action being taken against him, no matter what the result of the investigation turns out, because under state athletic commission rules, a fighter cannot be fined or suspended retroactively once he or she passes a drug test. She mostly defeated Oscar De La Hoya in 2003 in Las Vegas and passed his drug test administered by the Nevada Athletic Commission, but then the Bay Area Laboratory Cooperative, BALCO, same one that was connected to Barry Bonds, they broke that scandal in 2004, and it turned out that Mosley used the cream and the clear designer steroids created by BALCO founder Victor Conte that were undetectable at the time. And because Mosley passed his test, even his admission to the grand jury was not enough to allow Nevada to penalize him for his usage. He went on with his career as if the steroid usage never occurred. And the same will be true of Gamboa and every other fighter who may be implicated. As a result, the would-be cheaters in boxing MMA are far ahead of the game when it comes to beating the testing they face. With few exceptions, they're tested following their fights when they know the testing will be done. The United States Anti-Doping Agency's reasoned decision that proved cyclist Lance Armstrong was using PEDs noted in great detail that part of the way Armstrong beat so many tests despite cheating was by evading testers. He knew when the tests were coming and timed his usage accordingly, so it cleared his system before the next test. Congress probably won't act until it has to, but it needs to consider a law requiring all fighters to carry a biological passport and to submit to random unannounced testing year-round. And it also needs to provide the money to fund the program. And if it doesn't, it's only a matter of time before a fighter dies at the hands of someone who's using performance-enhancing drugs. And hopefully steps will be taken to deal with that. Some states, actually, like California and Nevada, try to prevent cheating. New York, though, recently allowed Eric Morales, who tested positive for the banned substance clenbuterol, to fight despite knowing of his failures. And until there's a thorough, comprehensive, nationwide system in place, fighters are going to continue to cheat for the most part. You guys got any thoughts on that one?
Well, it seems like it's just such chemical warfare that if you decide to go down that road, you almost need a chemist in your corner. Because, like you were saying, back when Mosley with Mosley and De La Hoya, it wasn't detectable back then. But the technology's changed so much and improved so much, the methods of detection, and yet we're seeing more and more cases coming up of people using. You know, it's just almost like a crazy chess game.
The other side of it, too, is, you know, I see the commercials for this Androgel and that stuff, and there's some serious side effects. So it's not just worrying about what will happen to the other guy because one guy's using, but what about all these guys who are using and their health, what it does to them?
Yeah, well, I think we've seen that in competitive bodybuilding for so long, too, that, there's been some deaths there. So some guys have even died backstage before the contest. Of course, that's a combination of diuretics and everything else too. But it's the risk has always been there.
Mm-hmm.
But it just seems like guys want to win so bad. I remember reading a survey once where some Olympic athletes were asked, if you could get the gold medal at the risk of dying within a year, would you do it? And some of them said they would. They just wanted the gold that bad. It was worth their life. So how do you say to that kind of mindset?
Yeah, that's amazing.
And then plus, I do think there's the fatalism there that, you know, it's the reason we can drive past a car wreck and know that it won't be us, and the reason that we can get young men to go to war. They know they're bulletproof. I mean, the biggest expression on corpses on a battlefield is shock. You know, it happened to me. So I think I just don't think many athletes are focused on the long-term risk. They're just if they decide to juice, they're just not going to worry about the side effects. But that's a good point because it can work both ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of brings back a little bit of a memory from earlier today when I talked to Luke Barnett. I got a couple interviews with the Ultimate Fighters today, and Luke, might have been Bubba McDaniel. Yeah, no, it was Bubba McDaniel, my first interview. He said, you know, you're kind of going to be tapped in the head in the first place to be an Ultimate Fighter or to be in a mixed martial artist and be in that sport and take punches to the head. So it just kind of comes with the territory that you got to have a little bit of a screw loose. But that was his thoughts on it. So, Tony, you got anything to weigh in on this one?
Well, I was actually waiting to when we were going to do our recaps of some of the other boxing matches from last week. I got some stuff to talk about.
All right.
We talk about PED so much, I ain't got nothing more to say about it.
The defense rests.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. Well, I know we had Lucas Matisse and Mike Dallas Jr. That was a big card on was a Showtime.
Yeah, I actually I can proudly say I called it wrong. I said it wouldn't go five rounds, and it didn't even go one. But Lucas Matisse is a bad dude. He really is. He's a bad dude. He has two controversial losses in his career. And from watching Mike Dallas has some talent. You know, he's not a bad fighter, but I knew he did not have what it takes to beat the guy like Matisse. And, you know, what was it, about a minute and a half into it, it was over. He called him at a counter right hand, and, you know, one and done. Boom.
Yeah, I didn't see any highlights. I read a little bit about it, but and then the undercard, your boy Harry Joe Yorgi didn't do too well either.
Yeah,
tough night.
I was, the main thing at first is there's two fighters that are twin brothers, Jermell, Jerneell, and Jermall, or Mall. Tell me how confusing that is. Parallel. And because I saw, obviously getting ready for the card, it was like, okay, Jermell Charlo versus Harry Yorgi, and then I was like, okay, Jermall Charlo, and I'm like, wait a minute, isn't that the guy fighting Yorgi? Then I realized it's a set of twins. But before the fight started, I was reading some predictions, and I often read on Facebook a gentleman by the name of Rick Laser, and he puts predictions on every fight that's going to be televised. And he, I remember him writing on there like, Charlo in a completely one-sided fight. And I was like, well, I don't really know this guy. I mean, I've never seen him. And I don't know, like I said, I don't know if his record was a bad on the team or if he was a legitimate prospect. And I know Harry hasn't fought much since the loss to Alfredo Angulo 3 years ago. This is a guy that still knocked out Ronald Hearns. He's still had some good wins on his ledger, and a guy that I've seen fight in person about five times. And we're saying it's going to be a completely one-sided fight, and lo and behold, it was. And what's hard to tell was Turlo was really that good or if Harry had slipped that much, but he was getting hit with shots over and over. He couldn't get out of the way of them. And it was almost like he, for a guy that was known for having quick hands and pretty good reflexes, it was like his hands were glued to his face. He couldn't get his punches off. And, and he took a pretty bad beating. And I think it might be, if not time to retire, it might be time for him to take some time off, spend time with the kid, and really think about, his next career move. Because, he's one of the good guys in boxing. I know him. I've known him personally for 8 years now. And yeah, you don't want to see anything happen to you. You don't want to see him get hurt. Well, actually, in boxing, you really don't want to see anybody get hurt. But he's a good family man. He's got four kids. And, it might be time for him to maybe think of another career path.
All right. And then the other fight on that card was, I don't know the opponent off the top of my head, but you can't forget the Jesus fight of the week. Jesus Soto Cross won his fight.
Yeah, and he's been off a couple pretty significant losses in the last year, and he fought pretty well. You got to give him credit for that. He kept his career afloat, and he's the type of guy, he's going to be in every fight, whether, he wins or he loses, and he's going to give 100% effort. I remember the fight he had last year against Dave Rosado, and he took a pretty good shellac. It was the first time he was ever stopped. And
okay, we had a little problem there. I tried to load the page on ShareDog, and the conversation crashed. So we were just talking about Jesus.
Well,
okay, back again. I guess we were talking too much about Jesus.
Yeah.
Some divine intervention kicked us off, I guess.
Yeah, all I can say is he took a beating and he filled up his hands to the part of him, so they appreciate how tough he was in the end.
All right. Well, what else we got for boxing coverage that we didn't mention? We forgot.
Well, let me see if we got anything significant this weekend. I won't be around much to watch on. Next weekend, we do have a postponement on the Danny Garcia-Zab Judah fight. Garcia injured his ribs in training, so that's why got the whole card postponed to April 27th. And actually, I did want to ask Jelly about that. He had posted on his Facebook status, defending Danny Garcia, because I guess people were ripping on him. So it was only a rib injury. It was not only a rib injury, you know. That's a pretty significant injury in boxing. And when I was looking at Joey's page, there was a picture of Danny Garcia holding his infant daughter. So, you know, I guess they're pretty good friends, and I was going to ask him on you know, his opinion on the people, you know, smashing Garcia or something in the fight.
Yeah, that's not cool. I mean, let's just actually sustained a rib injury in the boxing ring like that. Tony, you there? Hello, Tony. I'll start Tony back. Hi, folks. Apologize for the technical difficulties. We're working on it here. Should be back on track any minute. I think we've figured out the problem. Hey, there he is. I think we've got everything fixed now. Knock on wood. And we should...
I just want to run down these fights coming up this weekend, then I got to get off because I'm actually leaving to go to my friend's house in a few moments.
Okay, sure. Tom and I will have plenty to talk about in the MMA world. We haven't even covered UFC on Fox 6 yet, so go ahead.
Well, we don't have anything significant for Saturday night, but tomorrow night on ESPN 2, and I don't think I'm going to be able to catch this card. I don't think I'm really that disappointed about it. It's one of my all-time favorites. We actually made a story on that Corey Spinks. I read a story back about 5 years ago on the top fighters that I couldn't miss when they were on TV, and then the top fighters that I would always avoid when they were on TV, and Corey Spinks again. He's on the tail end of his career now. He's 39-7. He's only got 11 knockouts. He lost his last fight to Canine Bondage. He was actually beaten twice in the last 2.5 years by stoppage. The last time he scored a stoppage win was in 2001, it looks like. So, you know, unless he's getting stopped, you're going to get a distance fight. I mean, he's fighting a guy by the name of Carlos Molina. He's 25, only 6 knockouts. He was a fighter that was beating the piss out of James Kirkland before they had that bullshit DQ in round 10. Well, that was last March. I watched that when I was in Florida.
I was with
that. We had combined 59 wins and only 17 knockouts. So likely you're going to see a fight down the distance here. Spinks, I could never really stomach him that much because he would dance and act like a fool going to the ring, and then he would run. The co-feature is a guy, Jose Luis Castillo, who's been around probably since the Romans were off patrolling the earth. And he's 64-11. 65 knockouts. 7 of his losses have come by stoppage. You know, he was in a great fight with Diego Corrales nearly 8 years ago. But, you know, he's a guy that's also pretty much been on the downside. His best days were in the 135-pound range. He's now, you know, in the 147-pound range. He's fighting Antoine Smith, 22-4. 12 knockouts, coming off a big win over Ronald Cruz in his hometown of Bethlehem, only about a block or two from Cruz's house. But other than that, you know, he had some decent wins. He had lost to Kermit Cintron by decision, lost to Robert Garcia. He had a few decent wins on there, but nothing, spectacular. So that's the card you're going to see on ESPN. I'm sure my dad will still.
Okay, folks, we're back. We're going to run a little bit extra overtime. We're just trying to get things straightened out here. We got a little bit of a computer glitch. Of course, we're going to recap UFC on Fox 6, a big fight between John Donson and Demetrius Johnson. Mighty Mouse won all five rounds, so it was a good contest there. We had Rampage Jackson lose his last appearance in the octagon. There's plenty to talk about on that fight with Glover Teixeira. And we're just going to go right through this warning here of time running out. But in a minute we'll be able to reconnect with Tom, hopefully, and get the show back on the road. Apologize for the delay here. Just working through these technical difficulties. There's a lot of wind up here in the hills of New Hampshire we're dealing with. I don't know if that has anything to do with the connection, but it's a bad one tonight. While we're waiting to get Tom on, too, I did want to mention the Bellator on Spike last week. The Bellator show on Spike was the debut of King Mo and Bellator. And I don't have the opponent's name off the top of my head, but King Mo really displayed some excellent boxing. And, you know, speaking of Rampage Jackson there, he actually showed some pretty decent boxing in his loss. So he's talked about going into boxing, and so has King Mo. And I bet those two would make great opponents if they could meet at a comfortable weight class for both of them. But it was definitely some unbelievable boxing put on by King Mo. He looked really, really good in there. I think he's actually working with Jeff Mayweather. And I know that Rampage Jackson focuses a lot on his boxing. But before anything happens with Rampage, I guess he has to get through the the matching clause in his contract. So he could end up being a reluctant UFC fighter. They match any offer that someone else comes up with. He'll still have a contract with the UFC, so I don't know how that's going to work out for him, but he's at... they report to the fighters. So that's another thing that he's definitely genuinely upset about. Apparently, they've given higher numbers to the press than they've given to their own fighters. And a lot of their fighter contracts have clauses in them which give the fighter a portion of the pay-per-view proceeds. So if that's true, I don't know if it quite rises to the level of criminality, but I would think if they could prove that... you know, that could become a class action thing if enough fighters have been screwed there. But we'll have to keep an eye on that in the coming weeks and months here and see if that becomes an issue. But, you know, it definitely sounds like Rampage is not going to be the end of having to keep going in the UFC. Very unhappy camper with their... but we'll end up boxing. I would definitely...
I love going against King. When King Mo, like I said last week, he's, or the week before I mentioned this, but he's kind of turning into the Bo Jackson at sports. So we'll see if he ends up capitalizing on this opportunity with Bellator and then crossing over into boxing. I know, you know, if he's doing wrestling at the same time, I'm sure that they would allow him to do boxing. I know the UFC has a setup but doesn't allow their fighters to do anything else outside of the UFC sport-wise. So it's definitely a good freedom to have in Bellator to be able to go and cross-compete. We'll see what happens. And still working on trying to get Tom reconnected here. The computer's being pretty slow, but we do have some big stories to talk about. UFC is adding a strawweight division, 115 pounds. So all you little guys out there who would love to get into MMA but haven't had the motivation because the UFC doesn't have that weight class, you've got an opportunity now. It's coming in the near future. They're going to add a 115-pound strawweight division. So now that that's happened, some guys that didn't have that big breakthrough opportunity will now have that. Let's see what else we got here. I did some conversations there about life in the fighter house and the rigors of the show. Discussions there with the fighters. Bob McNeil mentioned that the weight cutting was pretty bad. You know, even though you get whatever you want to eat, you have to cut weight, so you can't really eat everything that you want, even though you get whatever you want. So that was one of the things that they mentioned. You know, the whole situation with a tough fight for Gilbert Smith coming into the house. He ended up having to face Luke Barnett right off the bat, who was a tall, lanky guy with a huge reach advantage. And it didn't quite work out to his benefit. It was a tough fight. What ended up happening was his whole team was kind of up in arms about that pick. And they ended up bringing their concerns to the coaches. And Bubba McDaniel came off kind of looking bad, kind of looking a little bit selfish. So I did ask him about that experience. And he actually seemed like he's taking some heat for it. He was mentioning that, you know, on one hand, he had a lot of people after the first episode that were really inspired by, you know, seeing somebody from their area on the show. And you know, following and pursuing their dream. But then there were the haters, I guess you could call them, who ended up getting on his case because of the way he kind of acted about, you know, his path, being concerned with his path through the show. And it was a big deal to them, the fighters, because they wanted to go through this season undefeated. Without a loss on their team. So he actually kind of gave some clarifying answers to the question I asked about that. And he made a good argument. I mean, he said that basically anybody in that position would also be selfish. You have a situation there where, you know, that's a big opportunity for your career. And it's not something you take lightly, and it's definitely a situation that requires, you know, the best path to the finals that you can possibly get to end up winning the tournament. So it's definitely a relatable situation. He helped clarify with the interview. Wow.
attention to that. Luke Barnett had some interesting observations about fighting in the UK. It's been pretty difficult over there for him to get decent fights, and he said overall the lack of major shows over there, number one, and number two, the UFC itself is such a big animal. He explained that a lot of these guys are trying to pad their records to get into the UFC, so they don't want to fight the best guys coming up through the ranks. So it's an interesting perspective I had never heard from anybody before about the growth of the UFC kind of having a negative impact on the smaller circuits. So we'll have to keep an eye on that in the future. But I'm going to try to get Tom on the call. I don't know what's going on here. He hasn't tried to reconnect. He might think the show is over because our time has trickled down here. Let's try to reach out to him. Hate to be the only voice on the broadcast here. Give me a minute here, folks. Tom back on, get this overtime back on the road here. While we're waiting, I'm just going to run through some of the preliminary fights from UFC on FX6. We had, starting off, David Mitchell, a unanimous decision win, beating Thorson. And we had Kapil Patel, by arm triangle choke. Had a fight between Sean Jordan and Mike Russo. Knockout by TKO by punches and elbows by Sean Jordan after Russo came out really roaring. Tom, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Okay, we're back, huh?
Yeah, we're in overtime. So,
okay.
We can catch up on all those technical difficulties we had. So I was just running through the UFC on FX or on Fox 6 card, and talking about Sean Jordan versus Mike Russo. I watched a lot of these fights this time around, and he obviously didn't look in that great of shape in the first place, but he was throwing some bombs, and then Jordan came back and took him out of the picture. Pretty interesting fight. And then the guy we talked about last week, the janitor, Vladimir Machashenko, wasn't much of a gatekeeper for Ryan Bader. He hooked him up, and they called it a guillotine choke, but I think it was more of a arm triangle type of submission that he connected on Machashenko in the first round, and it was actually listed as the quickest submission win of any light heavyweight fight in the history of the UFC. So
now, I don't know if this says a lot of good things about Bader, or if it just says that maybe the janitor is really slipping faster than we thought, or if he just got caught. But regardless, congratulations, Peter, for trying to resurrect Floyd. As I said last week, this was a have-to-win, absolutely must-win fight for him.
Then we had Pascal Krause, who's actually a student of Duke Rufus, who we tried to get on tonight, but he ended up coming down with the sickness that's going around, I guess, probably the flu. And he had to actually cancel his whole trip to Las Vegas to go see the fights this weekend, which we probably won't end up getting to talk much about. We had so much other stuff to cover. But Krause beat Mike Stumpf by unanimous decision. It wasn't always an entertaining fight, but Krause actually, you know, performed very well in that one, and he ended up with the unanimous decision.
Yeah, Stumps impressed me as a tough guy, but he was just a bit behind in all ways. So I was very impressed with Krause.
And we had the big home tonight. Hayuki by a split decision. It wasn't very impressive by him. I know he took a lot of heat for his fight with Gray Maynard there, where he didn't really engage all that much, and he was moving a lot, throwing a lot more jabs and power punches. And this one wasn't all that much different, I thought. I don't know what it is about Clay Guida's game that he thinks that the way to win fights, but I think he's got to work on it. And
yeah, and I don't think he's picking up too many fans at all with that style.
No. And, you know, there was some judging controversy in that one, too. I think one of the judges gave Clay Guida all three rounds. And And we had another first-round knockout with 9 seconds left to go in the first round. TJ Grant took out Matt Wyman with elbows and punches. That was a pretty impressive performance by TJ. And I'm sure Wyman will be back. He's a tough character. We had Ricardo Lamas beat Eric Koch by TKO. Well, Lamas is actually trying to get a title shot at this point, so we'll see what happens. But he definitely looked good in that fight. Koch actually came out pretty strong, and Lamas overcame everything that he had to throw at him, put in a great fight. And Anthony Pettis, who's another Rufus Sport guy, he totally beat the pants off of Donald Cerrone. Kicked him in the body and just dropped him right to the ground. Just looked amazing in that fight. And, of course, he's calling for a title shot as well.
Yes.
Which he'll likely get very soon.
You know, I never did understand the psychology of one fighter saying another fighter's afraid of him. And I think that really lit a fire under Pettis. I mean, maybe not that he needed one, but that he seemed really set off by that, and congratulations to him for doing what he had to do.
Right. And then, of course, we had Quentin Jen. Accent. He got really, really smacked around by